Bonjour, madame, mademoiselle, et monsieur. It is Oh, I'm not at Eurovision anymore. It's all about Windows Phone.
Woohoo, you're back.
Hey. Fighting music or guitars or postcards of scenery and dodgy voting and Sweden doing very well. I miss it. 352 days to go. Until then, that means we've got lots and lots of All About Windows Phone podcast. Hello, guys. Hugh and Spence here back in the chair once more. I should have Rafe.
Yes, you've got me here. Hello, everybody.
Lovely. Rafe, did you vote for Albania?
Is it going to horrify you to say that I didn't actually vote in the Eurovision Song Contest?
Well, I was in Azerbaijan. It's to be expected. Most people there didn't vote either. Or maybe that was the actual official elections. Anyway, yeah, we have Rafe Blanford. We also have David Gilson.
Hello, Ewan. Welcome back. And I'm sorry, I didn't vote on Eurovision 2, but I was watching the videos you were pumping out of Azerbaijan.
Ah, yes. Terry Vision. We can't have him on the podcast, can we, Rafe?
No, we can't. But if people are really wanting to check him out, they can go to www.escinsight.com.
Yeah, there's an extra W in there. I'll leave you to guess where it all goes. Right then, an exciting week or two in the world of Windows phones. More applications coming out. New looks and examinations at the technology. Live events. Application picks. All of that as well. And, of course, guys, an extended week or two's test of a Windows phone in a foreign country. So, any questions about me using the good old Nokia 800 out in the field?
Okay, tough question to ask you. And we've already covered in the previous podcast how he got hold of his local data sim. But one of the things I'm curious about, Ewan, is that you were on the road for a couple of weeks. And obviously, I'm sure you had your laptop with you, but out and about at the venues doing lots of interviews. How did you find the kind of Windows Phone experience for keeping track of where you're meant to be and when you're meant to be there, given that a lot of the time you're kind of sitting in front of a desk writing topics or doing bits of recording? So this was kind of a completely different usage case for you with Windows Phone.
Yes, because you were sitting there with a laptop doing the work during the day. But then, of course, there's a huge amount of mobility involved. You're running back and forward into the stadium itself. I mean, I know it's a 3-hour show, but you've got 2 weeks of rehearsals. So you'd literally go in, watch somebody for 10 minutes, come out, watch the reels on tape, write up what you saw, discuss with everybody if that song had a good chance of winning or not, unless it was San Marino, in which case you go, no. And that meant that, you know, the laptop stayed at the desk and the phone was coming everywhere. So the phone had all the schedules in it. There's a huge amount of PDFs coming out. Obviously, the Google Calendar sync support allows you to go in there as well. And media capture is always an interesting one. To be honest, I felt a little bit let down by the camera, but that's true of pretty much any smartphone because you don't get that close to the stage. After a stage invasion by Jimmy Jump 2 years ago in Norway, the stage has always been very much raised. The press are kept back just far enough that if you've got a big DSLR with a zoom lens, you're fine. But if you're sitting with the, if we had Steve, we'd insert the technical term for the lens with the F numbers and everything in here, on the smartphone, you know, you get pictures that are great for my memory. You know, I've got some wonderful shots that mean something to me. But in terms of could you use these for publication again? Could you actually go out and use them in website articles? The answer is not really, because either the subject is too small or you need to zoom in at a low light level. Now, that's not unique to Windows Phone. You know, if we went around everybody in the room, we probably had every different type of smartphone out there, iPhone 4Ss, the new Sony Xperia S running on Android are two that immediately spring to mind. Even the good old Nokia E9 was a E7, was doing wonderful stuff. But again, you know, their photo capability here was great for personal, but here, not for business, because you couldn't just get close enough.
So that was really a failing of the camera technology more broadly and smartphones. One of the interesting things we've been talking about on our sister site recently is the Nokia 808 PureView. And we know from what Nokia said that technology is sort of on its way to Windows Phone devices in due course. And I've seen some demos taken in those kind of music concert conditions, you know, dark lights and side lighting, which are very challenging for cameras that look absolutely fantastic. And that's partly achieved by using a much better sensor, but also good optics. So I do wonder when we get a PureView device with Windows Phone, whether that kind of problem will start to go away. But I'd agree, even the very best camera phones, things like the N8 and some of the other high-end devices really struggle even now in those conditions, unless you know what you're doing and you have to take quite a few shots to get one good one. Outside of that, what else on the Windows Phone experience, was it that was most helpful when you were kind of in that rushing around madly scenario trying to keep track of what you were doing?
It's speed. And it comes down to the live tiles in Glance and Go, where you can literally pick up the phone, go to the screen, and you can see emails, you can see text, huge amount of text flowing back and forward. I think we arrange more by text than anything else. Your calendar, of course, when you've got like 20 or 30 calendar events in a day, and each one lasts 10 minutes, seeing now and next, incredibly useful. And also, I've got the live tile for Vicky, my wife. For those of you who don't know, she's in hospital now having an operation. So in all the prep and everything, it was great to be able to see just really quickly when I had a message for her and nothing was lost. Now, I know a lot of people are going to go, oh, but other phones do that. You could use widgets and stuff. So pardon my French, but I actually have on loan here from Sony an Xperia S, and I used that for 48 hours. So this is one of the latest Android phones. Admittedly, it's running 2.3 and not version 4, but it will be upgraded soon. But it's one that you can buy in the shops right now. And, I could get the same information out of it. I could find out all the status updates and everything. But it took three times as long because it was going in and out of applications. The widget showed a little bit of info, but not everything. You still had to go into the full application and to go through to the right screens and everything. So while functionally Android worked just as well for me as Windows Phone did, Windows Phone got me to the information faster. That meant I had more time to do coverage, to work out where I could put my puppet next, to enjoy an Azerbaijani beverage. For some reason, orange juice over there is called Portugal, which is really confusing when you're in the Portuguese rehearsal. And so Windows Phone just made everything faster. And I know that a lot of people are going to, you would say that because it's a Windows Phone podcast, but we've been around all these devices for years, and in anger I would pick up Windows Phone. The only issue I would have, tell you what, can anybody guess what the issue, David, can you guess the one big issue I had?
I'm gonna say battery life.
You're right, it's battery life. It's better than the Xperia S. I'll be honest there. The Xperia S had to be charged by lunchtime. And to be honest, Windows Phone can just about get through a day if you put battery saver on. But I was topping it up over lunchtime, partly because I wanted to keep it full, because I knew that it was weird because we were finishing rehearsals at 4 a.m. in the morning and getting back in at 11 a.m. the next day. So you were running an 18-hour day at full pelt with full connectivity, with all the media going, capturing HD video, which is actually some of the HD video stuff. When you're in the moment at the Euroclub, you only have one moment to get, yourself, your puppet, and a drunk money wheeling off RTE. You have to use the video that you have to hand, and HD capture worked perfectly on the smartphone. It is down to the battery again. And there's a point where I wish that I had a 710 rather than 800, because I could have just switched the battery out. And I know we've got style and fashion and Mophies and extra charges and everything, but really, if I could just went slide, bang, bang, close again, I would have been a very happy bunny.
And I would like to echo what you said, because I had an experience last week, which, while I wasn't running around in Azerbaijan for several weeks, I did have a very hectic day. I had to travel into a city centre and do a lot of errands very quickly. That's a relative term for me, but never mind. I had to do a lot of errands, but I was also trying to keep in touch with everything that was going on online. And yes, absolutely, the speed of the user interface. I had what I would call a day of smartphone nirvana, whereby it let me do everything that I wanted to do, and it didn't get in the way. I wasn't having to faff around saying, oh, well, I need to go into this app and do this setting just to do this. No. For keeping in touch with stuff online, I didn't have the battery saver on because I wanted it to stay connected. And fortunately, it was a good day for 3G connectivity. So I had the live tiles up that I needed at the top, and they were bubbling up the information I needed. So I could just glance at the phone and just be made aware of stuff without even going into an application. Then little bits of information I needed for instructions of stuff I was doing, I had on OneNote tiles that were there just ready for me to get. And the camera, I actually had to take some photos for somebody of some close-up items. So I won't go into that, but the camera worked excellently. So yes, it did everything I wanted to do quickly, and it just didn't get in my way. It it complemented me rather than being a separate task in and of itself. Although, yes, again, it was the battery life, because it was a Lumia 800, so I didn't have a rechangeable battery. So what I was having to do when I slipped it in my coat pocket, I have a Nokia DC16 charger, and I was having to plug that in all the time to keep it going.
And I think this is something that Nokia are going to be completely aware of. Everybody knows battery issues have been with smartphones all the way back to the 7650 and before that as well. And they've got to be aware of it. And, you know, we see with the 900 that you are getting bigger batteries coming into the devices. So we're going to watch that, I think, over the next 6 to 9 months.
Yeah, it's probably worth pointing out here that the three of us are particularly aware of or annoyed by battery issues, because we've nearly all come from Symbian devices where typically you'd get a battery life that would last a day and a half, or certainly would do a full 24 hours without needing a recharge. And it's probably fair to say it's not that Windows Phone is bad as a smartphone. I mean, in general, I'd say that Android is probably the worst platform, although, you know, that's obviously offset by the capacity of the batteries and depends what you're doing with the device. Windows Phone and iOS are about on a par, and then Symbian is significantly ahead. And a lot of that's to do, of course, with the you know, processor and the RAM that it's running on. They're just more energy hungry. It's also what you're doing with the phones. I think all of those three more battery hungry platforms are more always on, so there's emails and data connections coming in, and data connections and big touchscreens are probably the two big power drain. So when we're talking about this, it's, you know, partly our experience and our history of devices talking. But yes, it is something that's being looked at. Unfortunately, battery technology has not moved with the same pace that all the other specifications have in the smartphone. There's no one big thing necessarily on the horizon to improve that, but there are several promising technologies around the batteries, and it's mainly to do with putting filaments into batteries to be able to pack more energy in and make them more efficient. So we'll have to wait and see on that. You know, there may well be some miracle technology coming along. Something like graphene holds a lot of promise, for example, for batteries. But we'll be reporting on that if we do see something. But don't expect it to be solved overnight. I think doing efficient software engineering, you know, i.e. making your platform more power efficient, is probably going to be where we'll see most improvements in the next year or two.
And it would be fair to say that the Eurovision and going to conferences and music venues are very densely packed environments for data. They really do tax the smartphone out there to the limit. And, you know, it still manages 95% of it. And we're carrying little pocket computers with us all the way around. Okay. One of the things I did miss was my daily newspaper. I've missed my daily newspaper now for about 9 years and relied on the internet. I also remember an old service called Avant Go. Those of you who remember Palm OS will remember this was a proto-Google reader before even RSS had been built. But Nokia Reading. Guys, I understand that while I've been away, you guys have got your hands on it, the world's playing around and poking a big stick in it and everything. And David, you've been putting it under the newsprint microscope.
Well, we can tell you've been away, Ewan, because that newsreader aspect of Nokia Reading isn't actually in yet. That's coming in a future version, I'm afraid.
Oh, well, that's okay. Can you still get books and stuff? Can I still get Devil May Care by Sebastian Falks?
I'm sure you can, Ewan. I mean, there's actually lots of books you can get on Nokia Reading. And actually, I know not everybody can get Nokia Reading yet, although it is going to be slowly rolling out across various countries across the world. It's currently available in 6. And what Nokia Reading is, it's that it's basically the Nokia Lumia bookstore. You can buy books that are available very much similar to what's available on, say, WH Smith's in the UK and Kobo Reader. And there's a lot of very similar titles to what you can find on Amazon and Kindle. And it's a very similar experience to all of these apps. I mean, for example, like Amazon Kindle. At the moment, all you can do is shop for books and read them on the device. Other features that are coming in the future are going to be audiobooks and a sort of curated newsreader, kind of like Flipboard on iOS. But those are a way off. Although, given that this is a version 1 product, it was, for what it does, it's very good. But there's still a lot to say about it. I'll start with the buying experience. There's various categories that you can browse to discover books. One pivot view that they have in the panorama is book lists. And they're like curated lists of books, for example, murder mysteries or books under £5. It's very much like the mixed radio in Nokia Music. It's the literary equivalent of that. And once again, this is something that is very well suited to Metro UI. It feels very natural just to sweep through different views. You can also browse by genre, and once you get drill into a genre, you can relist by release date, popularity, or price. And there's also there are lots of free books available. As far as pricing goes, it's very similar to, as I was mentioning, Kobo and basically the ebook list prices. However, unfortunately, Amazon still beats everybody. Amazon generally has the lowest prices still. But that aside, if you are purchasing a book, the purchasing experience is very painless. The books have free trials where you can generally download the first chapter to read through to see if you can like the feel of a book. And a nice added bonus for people, say, coming across from Symbian funds is that if you've already associated your payment card details with your Nokia account, it will remember them, so you won't have to enter any card details.
Thanks, David. Yeah, that's a great summary of Nokia reading there. And the pricing probably is the standout issue for a lot of people. Although I will say, for many of the books I've checked, the price has been exactly the same. I think it's some of the bestsellers that Amazon is able to talk to the publishers and get a special deal. Once you get outside that, the prices are, I would say, broadly equivalent, and the occasional great deal on Kindle as well. But I think the other big issue that will come up for people, David, is the kind of the digital rights management. What's the situation there? You know, how locked in is it to the Nokia Lumia devices?
Fortunately, the books aren't tied in just to your one device, but they are tied into the Lumia range, which is a shame. The way it works is that the books are actually encoded with Adobe ebook technology, but it's tied to your Nokia identification. And the problem with that is that you aren't going to have a Nokia ID on any other type of reader. So what we would have preferred to have seen is, rather than using a Nokia ID, that you'd use an Adobe ID that you could use elsewhere as well, and that the books actually be stored on your SkyDrive account, because that way you could load your books that you've already bought elsewhere, and also the books that you buy on Nokia Reading, take them away to another device in the future. It doesn't work like that. Your books are, as I said, your books are tied to your Nokia account. So if you happen to finish with a phone, say if you've got a 710 now and then you upgrade to a future device, let's say the Lumia 950, if there ever will be one, your books will be able to synchronize to that, but not to any other type of Windows Phone device.
Yeah, that's a good point, Dave. And I should just explain in a bit more detail this Adobe Reader technology. Essentially, this is the stuff for both DRM and then the management of the files itself. This is actually the most widely used ebook system. Essentially, everybody but Amazon is using it. So Kobo, Nook, some of the Sony Reader technology as well, that's all based off this stuff. And essentially, when you buy a book, it is tied to your ID, and you can use it on up to five devices. Those five devices, you can enable them and switch them off at your ID. So if you are no longer using your device, you'll switch it off and you'll switch it on to a new device. But because Nokia have linked it to their own ID system, that obviously won't work. If they could somehow federate with the Adobe ID system, theoretically at least, you could use titles from Nokia Reading, or indeed from another store, maybe the Sony store or the Kobo store, on your Nokia device itself. But until that federation happens, obviously that can't happen. The underlying technology may be common, but it's one of the classic pitfalls, I guess, of DRM, which is a shame. And of course, there is the file issue as well that David was alluding to there with SkyDrive. There's no way of copying the files onto or indeed off your phone at the moment. So I suspect that's something they may look at in a future version. And for all the kind of fuss that gets made around this, I'm not actually sure that many people will care, because, you know, how many people have multiple devices? And I think if you've already got a Kindle device, the chances are you're probably not going to be using Nokia Reading anyway. You might use the Amazon Kindle app, but anyone who's used e-ink technology will probably find it hard to read an e-book on anything else. And it's the seamlessness of the experience, you know, the fact that this works straight out of the box, and on devices like the Lumia 900 it will be pre-installed. I think the crucial thing to note here is that Nokia is planning to launch it in multiple markets, many of which have never really seen ebooks in a meaningful way. And so Nokia, much as it has done with digital music in some countries, will be a pioneer for ebook system. And it's kind of a reflection of Nokia's way of thinking, is to think globally when it launches services like this. At the moment, it is just restricted to a handful of countries in Europe, but the plan is definitely to increase it. The other thing I wanted to talk about, because I'm rather a fan of ebooks as well, as you can probably guess, both Dave and I were very excited to see this arrive on the device, is the actual reading experience itself. And I think Nokia have done a really, really good job designing it here. And my particular favorite feature of this was they've thought quite carefully about the two kind of modes. There's a night mode, which is basically white text on a black background. That's good for power saving. But in the other mode, it's not actually just a white on black, it's a slight off-white color, which just makes it a bit easier on the eye if you're doing any length of reading. The page turning is also done very well, and you can change font size. David, you know, was that a highlight for you? And I think also one of the things I know you've used is the live tile integration, which I think, again, a really clever idea for getting back into something quickly, which is really important on a mobile device.
Yeah, I definitely appreciated the grey, almost like pulpish colour of the background. Because I actually have certain like the readability issues. I can get pattern glare from text, and black on stark white is awful for me. So I appreciated that. I mean, people who have fans of the Kindle app may say, "Oh, well, we've got a sepia tone." Well, yeah, you do, and good for you, but never mind. what you can do with live tiles is once you're reading a book, you can pin it as a live tile, and the Nokia Reader reading remembers the last page you were reading, and the live tile actually, it mainly shows the cover out of a book, but it will flip over to show the first line of where you were. So you can just get a bit of a primer to refresh your memory of where you were up to in the book. And I was kind of disappointed there wasn't support for multiple bookmarks say if you're reading something for reference and you wanted to return to a certain point, it won't do that. But there is a progress bar that you can drag. So I mean, if you really had to do something like that, you could use OneNote to say, oh well, such and such is at a certain percent of the book, and sort of like get back to the rough location. But I really enjoyed the experience.
Yeah, and I'd hope that multiple bookmarks is something we'll see in a later version, because I think, as David said early on in the podcast, it's a very polished for a version one experience. I think what's clear to me is a lot of design has gone into this app, so I suspect we'll be hearing a lot more about it in the future. But Ewan, perhaps we should move on to some other topics at this point.
Indeed, yes. I picked up that we've had some interesting developments between Bing Maps and Nokia's mapping service. Obviously, Nokia Maps was huge in SIM, you know, one of the crown jewels. Rafe, what exactly has gone down there?
Yes, I guess as the location guru amongst the team, I should pick this one up. All that's really happening here is that traffic information and also the geocoding algorithms from the Nokia Wear platform, that's essentially what Navtech and Nokia's map assets are now being called. All the geo databases, a bit that describe the world, and the services that sit on top of that are being integrated into Bing Maps. And so that means that Bing Maps, both on the web and on the phone, has more accurate traffic information, and it's also available in more countries. I think we're up to over 30 countries. For any of those that have used Nokia Maps on either the Windows phone platform, on Migo, or indeed on Symbian, it's the same traffic information you get there, and so it's actually overlaid with different color coding indicating the sort of severity of the traffic. So you get yellow, and then you get red, and you also get black and green if it's flowing freely. There's a lot of information in there. The only slight fly in the ointment here for the Windows phone devices is that because initially Bing Maps just had traffic information in the state, there's no way to actually switch it on if your region setting on your Windows phone is set to anything other than the United States. So I think Microsoft need to do an update there, maybe behind the scenes, or they'll be able to push one out in the next software update, so you can actually see this traffic information if you're in a non-US country. So a little bit of a drop ball there, I can't help but feel, but it is all available on the web version. And I think this is just interesting from a strategic point of view, that when Nokia and Microsoft first announced their partnership, the traffic seemed to be very much one way. Everyone was talking about Nokia relying on Microsoft for their software engineering. This is a great example of how the assets do kind of go both ways. And the location stuff, the mapping stuff, tends to be underestimated how important it is, because it does underlie an awful lot of technology. And it's kind of that connection between the physical and the virtual world is really done through this kind of geo databases, this location asset that Nokia has. And we're going to see more and more of this in the future, both on Windows Phone and indeed on Microsoft's other properties. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see the Nokia Wear platform integrated into Windows 8, for example. It's certainly going to be in Windows Phone 8. We're not quite sure how the respective consumer brands, you know, Bing Maps and Nokia Maps, are going to work out either on Nokia devices or on non-Nokia devices. We'll keep you up to date on that. But I thought it was interesting that progress is being made here. The one question I've had from a couple of listeners and the audience on the site is, what's this geocoding algorithms? Basically, that's just the bit that enables you to do a clever lookup, so you can click a place on a map and it will tell you what the name of that place is, i.e. converting from sort of geographic coordinates into something a human can recognize. And it will also do it the other way around, in that you can click on a place name and it will give you the geographic coordinates. You won't see anything actually in the application about that. It's really a back-end thing. It's sort of querying, but it does significantly improve kind of route finding, for example, that kind of navigation, because it's making the link between geographic grid, the underlying sort of index, if you like, and the bit that sits on top, which is the way humans recognize places.
And one of the other bits of technology that's starting to seep around the edges into this whole ecosystem, Rafe, is PhotoSynth. I remember seeing this is the one that had the demo around Notre Dame Cathedral that Microsoft demoed about a year and a half ago.
Yes, that's right. This is an app that's available for Windows Phone, previously available on iOS. So I think there's a lot of Windows Phone fans who are very pleased to see this one arrive, because it's one of Microsoft's cooler bit of technologies. It actually started life as creating synths, which was essentially taking photographs in an area from multiple directions and combine it together in a clever 3D visualization. It's added a panorama feature later, and this is actually what it is on Windows Phone. It enables you to take what I'd describe as sphere panoramas. That means it's everything around you, so it's not just in one orientation. It's, you know, multiple orientations, and it then creates a kind of a 3D scene effect, where you can kind of imagine you're standing in place and just be able to circle around it up and down and see anything that's around you. You know, you can point it down at your feet. And what this app does, it actually lets you create these on the phone itself. You hold it up, you start taking photographs or panning around, and it'll actually automatically capture photographs. As I say, you don't have to move it like with the traditional panorama apps in a kind of a single motion. You can move it around, take as many pictures you like, and it will stitch them all together on the phone and create what's, you know, a pretty cool effect. I mean, how useful it is, I don't know. I actually think it's a pretty clever way of capturing a scene and then being able to record it, because it's very different to the traditional panorama. It's not really a flat photograph. It's a 3D visualization. Now, the stitching does happen on the phone. It will take a couple of minutes if you've taken a lot of photographs, and you can then share it to Twitter and Facebook, upload it to the PhotoSynth website. But just as a technology demo, you know, it's using obviously the accelerometer, the compass and the gyroscope to understand where you're pointing the phone when you take these pictures, and that enables it to stitch it together much more quickly than if it had to directly compare the images and look for similarities between them. So, you know, it's a really clever example of what a smartphone can do in a very unique way that a computer is able to do, but not without throwing a lot of processing power. And, you know, smartphones and the sensors that sit within them are going to enable all sorts of interesting experiences. We've only kind of touched the surface with, you know, rotating the screen. Oh, that's fairly boring. Or the compass to, you know, orientate you on a map. There's a lot more that you can do with that. And there's going to be a lot more sensors added to smartphones in the future. And so you can expect to see more of these kind of wow experiences going forward.
So looking at smartphones that we have now, David has been extensively reviewing the Lumia 800. Of course, we've been using it day in and day out, as we've already discussed at Eurovision and various events in Rafe and I's life. But David, the 800, where are you up to now? And highlight and low light?
I'll come back to highlights and low lights, but I just want you to explain to people the reason we're doing such an extensive review on the Lumia 800. It's that it was really a landmark device. No matter what you think about Nokia or Windows Phone, that device is important to the platform, and it is a very popular device, at least in certain quarters. Rafe did the first part, concentrating on the hardware and the design of it. Steve took two parts, looking at the camera. I've been taking it on since then, and because it's such an important device, we also wanted to use this as an excuse to explore the whole platform. So you can come and read our Lumia 800 review parts and actually get a good feel for how any Windows Phone device will work. the last part that I wrote that went up on the site was looking at all the cloud services on WindowsPhone.com, not just the marketplace where you can buy an application on your desktop browser and have it delivered to your phone, similar to how Google Play works, but there was also the Bing search facilities built into the phone, like Bing Vision, Music ID, etc. And the next part that I'm currently working on is an in-depth look at the Picture Hub and the Music and Video Hubs. There's a lot to say about those. And then following that, I'm going to be wrapping up. I will look at the Knockout exclusive applications and provide a summary of all the other parts. And then all four of us, that means you two have homework, are going to provide a little statement on what we think about the device as in general.
Yes, as David says there, we're doing a review of Windows Phone as much we are the review of the Lumia 800. Ewan asked for some highlights earlier on. I just want to pick out something here that I think doesn't always get recognized enough, and that's the cloud services that David covered in his last part. And it's the ability to ring the phone by just going to the website and asking it to ring. You can also lock it, and there's location stuff. But I will admit to losing my phone on my desk or in a room and not being able to remember where I placed it. And you can use a landline to ring it, but just popping onto the website and pressing the ring button is a very way to relocate your device. It's probably a bit embarrassing to admit that, but I think it's actually quite representative of the fact there's actually this kind of online component to Windows Phone that people sometimes forget about, because you can also reinstall applications from there, from the Windows Phone marketplace, and generally look after your phone. Of course, it also ties in with stuff like SkyDrive for getting it files, and so that link between the two, people sometimes say, don't want to use Zune. Well, you don't actually have to use Zune for an awful lot of stuff. Yes, for updating the device, it's kind of absolutely essential, but for a lot of the rest of the time, you can just use the WindowsPhone.com website. David, what was a highlight for you?
I think my highlight is just how the user interface works with me, not against me. I can get things, as we were saying earlier on, actually, I can get things done quickly without having to root around and find what I'm looking for. I would have to say the low lights, which is what you asked for as well, is battery life is an issue. In fact, that I'm having to plug in an external battery a lot isn't good. And also, this is a very niche complaint, but I think it's valid nonetheless. I was a Linux user. And I was very happy and very productive with that. Although I felt that I had to move back to Windows to actually start getting the most out of and covering this platform for allaboutwindowsphone.com. So I don't think it's acceptable that I've had to change my desktop operating system to use this phone. However, I know that Windows accounts for probably 80% or more of desktop operating systems. So that's not going to be a problem for a lot of people, but it was a problem for me.
Yeah, talking of lowlights, I think for me, it's not so much a lowlight as I think something you need to be aware of when you're moving to Windows Phone, particularly from the Symbian platform, and that is the reliance on a data connection for a lot of the kind of secondary functionality or the stuff that sits below the surface. And when I'm talking about that, it's a lot of things are tied in with cloud storage or the People Hub. You're getting updates from your social networks. So if you don't have a data connection, it does feel that you lose quite a bit of functionality of the device. Now, that's nothing new for any modern smartphone, but I think it's particularly noticeable on Windows Phone, which, as David has kind of quite effectively described, starts to move away from this idea of individual applications and things that are linked together and you flow from one thing to the next, and this idea of having information float to the top of your start screen with live tiles, that of course does disappear if you're no longer on a data connection. Now, I think for most people that isn't ever going to be an issue because there's pretty good universal coverage, but it can be an issue if you then start diving into things if you've only got a 2G connection. And so I would say the Windows Phone experience, like any modern smartphone, works best when you've got a Wi-Fi or a 3G connection available.
I think for me, the low lights one is one that we kind of already hinted at, and I know we have SkyDrive and the cloud and everything, but I really wish that there was a space that you could just drop files on. Ebooks is a popular one. Because I've been reading ebooks for such a long time, I have a huge collection. Most of them in un-DRM'd PDB format or the EPUB format, which are easily read. I can't get them onto the device. And I know with Frida, you can hook into SkyDrive and everything and pick them up that way. But it'd just be nice maybe to have a little corner of the system. Not the whole thing. I understand the filing system is different and so on. But it would be nice just to do a little bit of back and forth. The same thing, one of the things that I found when I was traveling at Eurovision was, when I wanted to dump pictures off, I had to go through the PC. I couldn't just slam it into the nearest laptop, or if somebody wanted one of the big HD videos into their Mac so they could do the video editing, it had to come out the long way and everything. Again, that might be something that changes in Windows 8. We don't have any pre-knowledge of that, by any way, folks. I'm just suspecting that will happen. And the highlights, again, it's the speed. You can get in, you can do the thing, and get out again. It's really strange because I'm using Windows Phone less, but I'm getting more out of it because you can just go bing, bong, bosh, and you're done.
Thank you, yeah. Ewan. As you can probably guess here, we've deliberately in this podcast been sort of taking a review, kind of a long-term look at what our experience as Windows Phone has been, but would be really interested in hearing what you think, and indeed whether you like this kind of content on the podcast. You know, sometimes we'll vary what we're doing, and this time around we're talking from a very personal point of view about our experience with Windows Phone. Okay, guys, I think we're just starting to run out of time on this week's podcast. We were going to talk about app compatibility on 256 megabyte devices like the Lumia 610, but I think we'll save that for the next podcast. But we do have some time to do app picks of the week. And Ewan, I know you've been swarming away in Eurovision, but you actually have found some time to look at an interesting game, haven't you?
I heard what you did there. That was a good one. Yeah, Geodefense Swarm. It's equal to a Geodefense on Xbox Live. It's a terror defense game. It happens on a hex grid, and they have everything working out perfectly. The skill level that you have a choice of two is great. The learning curve is wonderful. You're up to five different types of towers, money earning potential, chance to use different strategies, either lots of little powered guns or just a couple of big ones. And I'm still playing it. It's got so much longevity in this. It's been out for about a week and a half now. And I have to resist playing it because I've got stuff to do. And when I consciously have to put a game down and go, no more, you're just too addictive and too good, somebody's onto a winner. Geodefense Swarm. It is an Xbox Live title. It's got the achievements, but it's the one.
Yeah, I'd agree. I've had a quick play with it, and I really enjoy playing this game. Definitely one of the better Xbox Live titles, and unusually improving on its predecessor quite significantly, I feel. Now, David,
it's a bit like The Empire Strikes Back, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. Now, David, I know you've been playing with an app called Krinken. It's recently got an update. Is that going to be your app of the week as a result?
Yes, it absolutely is. We've had Krink as an app of the week before, but I'm bringing it back because it's like a brand new application. It's for those who don't know, Krink synchronizes with your Chrome browser account. Now, Chrome is building in popularity on the desktop, and we may as well be using this because Microsoft aren't offering any sort of integration with the desktop Internet Explorer yet. Before, Krink would synchronize your Chrome bookmarks. That's all it would do, and it didn't support encrypted bookmarks. But now, it supports encryption, and it uses the whole Chrome API, so you can synchronize all your bookmarks, which is the bookmarks bar and the others folder. You can synchronize your stored passwords, your open browser tabs, and your recently closed tabs. And actually, with the stored passwords, that's kind of a good and bad thing, because on one hand, it's a nice cheap alternative to, say, something like LastPass, but it is very insecure, but you don't have to put in any sort of passcode to look those up, so make sure you don't lose your phone. But for me, but it's just going to make my sort of desktop to mobile browsing experience a lot more convenient. So, Krink.
Okay, thank you, David. I think my app of the week is related to trains. I always wanted to be a train driver growing up, and so I always liked train-related applications. And this is a ticketing application from First Great Western. It actually includes some mobile ticketing technology from a company called Masabi. It's just barcode-based, and rather than having to print out a train ticket, you can use that. But First Great Western is a bit like the Trainline application. It allows you to order your train tickets for any UK train journey. You go and pick them up from the automatic ticket booth at the station concerned. But it also, for anybody, I think it's worth downloading because it lets you look up train times and also get live train information, so you can see how far a train is along on its journey, so you can see information about live delays, particularly useful if you've got to go and pick someone up from the station. So that's the First Great Western application. It's FGW in the Windows Phone Marketplace. Of course, if you're using the All About Windows Phone application, you can get a direct download link into the marketplace by just going across to the links section in the app. Everyone else can further link on the website. It'll drop you into the app directory, and you can use the QR code with Bing Vision to scan it, or any other way of downloading all of these applications that we've been mentioning. But as I say, we're running out of time, so I think it's time to say goodbye, everybody. So it's goodbye from me, Rafe Blanford.
And it's goodbye from me, David Gilson, and we'll talk to you next week.
Myself, Ewan Spence, thank you all out there for listening, reading, and supporting the site. We shall catch you next week. Until then, stay safe, find somebody you love,